Science fairs. President Obama has said that we should celebrate science fair winners like we do Super Bowl champions. While we certainly aren't there yet, winning at a state or national science fair can yield scholarships and hefty monetary prizes that could help an aspiring student on his or her way. The experience of inquiry-driven learning can also have less tangible impacts, inspiring confidence and fostering curiosity. But science fairs are time-consuming and labor-intensive for both teachers and students who face a long list of competing opportunities and requirements. So, what is the state of science fairs? What does it take to win? And are science fairs worth the effort? Cora Beth Abel is executive director of the Massachusetts State Science and Engineering Fair, a nonprofit that has been organizing statewide science fairs since 1949. Kama Thieler is administrator of the Woods Hole Science Technology Education Partnership, a nonprofit organization that acts as a liaison between the Woods Hole scientific community and public schools in Falmouth, Mashpee, and Bourne. Kama, Cora, welcome to Living Lab.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on.
As always, we hope you'll join our conversation and share your science fair stories. You can give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. So, big questions first. What is it about inquiry-based learning? What is it about science fairs that can be so powerful for students? Kama, let's start with you. What's your take on this?
Well, I think it's really important for students not only to learn about the steps of the scientific process, but actually experience them. It's one thing to understand kind of what a hypothesis is and to understand about data, but to actually go through the process themselves with a topic that interests them can be very powerful.
And Cora, talk a little bit about this. This is part of the power of this process is the fact that it is student driven, but also obviously there has to be guidance from adults. What is the balance there that really makes for a great science fair project in terms of the student's initiative versus some mentor or teacher guidance?
Well, a mentor or a teacher as a guide needs to help the student continue to ask questions, make suggestions, and help when they're stuck if they have a problem with their research or their hypothesis or at any point in which is the science practice. And this is especially important and is one of the reasons science fair projects are of high value is today they line up with the new next generation science standards that are emphasizing the importance of science practices. So an independent research project for the science fair uses all those science practices, and an experienced scientist, a professional scientist or engineer, can help guide that student through the process of asking a question, researching the topic, making a hypothesis, designing an experiment, collecting and analyzing data, and then drawing conclusions that often bring up new questions. So it begins all again.
Now, Kama, that's the whole point of Woods Hole STEP, your program, is to connect students in Falmouth with this incredibly special science community that we have down here, you know, hundreds of scientists who can help students. So tell us a little bit about the role that the Woods Hole scientific community actually has played in keeping the Falmouth Science Fair a really vibrant science fair.
Well, the science community is involved in many aspects, from judging at the fair, from acting as mentors. With STEP, our partnership has a program at the local junior high for grades 7 and 8. And every year in February, 20 to 30 scientists from the community come into the school and act more as coaches than mentors to students, either wherever they are in the process. So they're either formulating their question, deciding if it's actually a testable question, if they're at that stage, or if they've started their project, talking with the scientists about how best to present their data, about what type of other research questions they might be asking about their project. Also, there are more formalized mentoring. And then the science institutions also contribute prizes and scholarship money. So there's a wide range of
activities. Well, and you've also said that, you know, because science fairs are so labor intensive, there's sometimes, there might in some communities be a sense that, okay, this is too much, we're going to get rid of them. And you've said, though, that the scientific community felt very strongly about maintaining the Falmouth. And it was almost a societal and cultural part of the culture of our town that the scientific community felt really strongly that this needed to be maintained.
Absolutely. I don't think the science community would ever let the Falmouth Science Fair fail. I think there would always be the resources and the volunteers in the community to help promote or sustain this fair if needed.
Now, I've read in some places that there's a sense that more broadly science fairs are on the decline. But Cora, you say that at the state level in Massachusetts, from your view at the state level, that really it seems like programs are expanding, that it's a very optimistic view.
Well, it is, especially at the middle school level that has been growing by leaps and bounds. Our organization created a strategic 5-year plan to help bring more schools, teachers, and students into the Science Fair program in Massachusetts. And through our Curious Minds initiative, we've been able to support either the development of new or expansion of existing Science Fair programs in 30 schools, over 30 schools, and over 75% of those are in high-needs districts. And after 4 years, the increase in the number of schools participating in the statewide science fairs has gone up 32% towards our target of 35% over 5 years. So sorry for all the numbers, but basically we are seeing this increase, and it's especially strong at the middle school level, where there happens to be a new national science fair program that was started by Broadcom. So at the high school level, it's more of a challenge. It's about the same number of schools. And, you know, within a school, that could still mean more students are participating, but we don't actually have that data. And I just wanted to circle back to something that was just said, and in terms of the value of a mentor, is a scientist can really help a student experience and understand how, quote, real science gets accomplished. It's collaborative, it's asking for advice, listening to what others think about the question. That's all part of the process. And the student gets to own the project, the research project, and will probably have to overcome some obstacles. And that demands creativity and inspires curiosity, which leads to further questions in the process. So really, science fair projects and independent research projects in STEM, more generally, are more relevant than ever before, as given the high stakes of our innovation economy and our need to build the future innovation workforce.
I want to follow up on what you're saying there. I mean, obviously, STEM, the science, technology, engineering, math, is such a buzzword right now at mm-hmm. both at the national level and elsewhere. But at the same time, we also have this very strong national push towards stronger standards in schools, more testing in schools. Here in Massachusetts, we have the MCAS system. And you mentioned earlier, but I wanted to go back to this. How is it that science fairs fit in with some of those testing and more rigorous standards that are being placed on our schools? Is this something that really contributes to that and builds toward those standards? Or is this something that teachers are facing an increasing challenge to try to fit this in on the side while they're trying to meet all those demands?
Well, in my experience, teachers, many teachers have to, quote, teach to the test. So it can become a conflict. But in the larger picture, especially with the new next generation standards, which emphasizes all these skills that get developed in a research project, it's really a win-win, because the student can then learn all these skills, get the excitement and the inspiration of working on something they really care about, guided by a mentor. And at the same time, they're building the skill sets and knowledge, the content knowledge they need in order to do well on these standardized tests. However, time-wise for the teacher, I think there's a real challenge there. And every school district handles that slightly differently. But when a school develops a culture of research and inquiry, you know, from bottom up, top down, side to side, that's when it really works, in my view.
In case you're just tuning in, my guests are Kama Thieler of the Woods Hole Science Technology Education Partnership and Cora Beth Abel of the Massachusetts State Science and Engineering Fair. We're talking science fair, and we invite you to join our conversation. Tell us how a science fair experience impacted your academic or career path. You can give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Now, Kama, we already touched on this a little bit, but the situation for middle schoolers and high schoolers, as Cora was just saying, there are different trajectories for those ages. And here in Falmouth, I know at the middle school level, I guess 7th and 8th grade, science fair projects are actually required.
Yes.
Once you get to high school, that's not the case. So how do you handle these different age groups when it comes to trying to set students up with a mentor and foster their science fair experiences?
Well, as I mentioned before, in the 7th and 8th school, there is a 15-year program that WISTEP has run to bring mentors into the school to talk through projects with students. At the high school level, it's a little different. As you mentioned, the projects are not required in most classes. And so there's not as much infrastructure there for students to be in communication with teachers and then teachers to be in communication with organizations like ours or directly with scientists in the community. So a lot more falls upon the student. The student has to be highly motivated. They have to kind of initiate the process themselves. And then when it gets to the point of either the students or a teacher contacting someone like me or contacting someone in the science community, you know, they're kind of on their own in some ways. They will get support from the teachers and the science fair coordinator at the high school, but they have to be much more independent and much more self-motivated.
What about parents? What is a parent's role in this process for a student? We've talked about the official mentors like teachers and the scientists in the community, but what about their parents?
Well, I have to say that I never look favorably upon a request from a parent to organize a mentorship relationship for their student. I see it as that it has to be student-initiated with the help of the teacher. But the parent can certainly talk with their student and kind of help them decide, you know, what topic they want to pursue, for example, or have them really try to figure out how much time they have to devote to a project with many other activities that they have going on. But I think the parent's role is supportive. They shouldn't be out there paving the way for their student. But it is important to have that support at home, either to be able to take your child out into the field to collect samples, for example, or to you know, just support them throughout the process.
I think this difference between the middle school and the high school level is really interesting. Cora, I know there are differences once you get beyond the local level and even beyond the state level. As you mentioned earlier, there's kind of a different trajectory whether you're in middle school or high school. So what happens after the state level? Say if you win at the state level, what happens next for a middle school student and what happens next for a high school student?
Sure. I think it's an interesting pipeline. So in Massachusetts, for example, thousands of students and hundreds of schools, students are working on independent research projects. The school may or may not have its own science fair. If they do, the highest scoring students in an exhibition or a presentation move on to a competitive environment where we have 6 regional science fairs in Massachusetts. Geographically across the Commonwealth, 6 at the middle school level and 6 at the high school level. And the top scoring projects in those competitive regional science fairs move on to the state, where we have about 400 students, 300 projects that compete for $500,000 in scholarships and prizes that we raise each year. And then at the high school level, there is no national science fair, but we send a team from Massachusetts that's statewide of about 25 students onto the International Science and Engineering Fair, which interestingly, there is more and more interest in science fair programs around the globe. The number of countries participating in the Intel ISEF, that's short for International Science and Engineering Fair, that continues to increase. And I think part of that is Intel has made this huge commitment to the International Science Fair, and it's helped to encourage and provide infrastructure to create new fairs. And there are over 60 countries that are participating in that. Again, though, the real growth area is in this middle school level. And at the middle school level, they've created a national science fair program So basically from the state and from any regional fair that's been affiliated with the national network, this is all connective stuff, those students, the top scoring students in those events get to move on to the national. And at first it's all online. They submit everything online, and then they get down to the top 20 or so finalists who were brought all expenses paid to Washington, D.C. for a science fair event at the middle school level.
So I'm curious.
National fair, we raise all the money. The student cannot raise the money. It's a no-cost to the student experience. It's a week-long event. And that's important, so it levels the playing field.
How do you present a science fair project online?
Well, I think the first step is that, there's actually a new science fair program online that Google started, but for the Broadcom Masters, which is this middle school science fair program, you submit your abstract and other data, your findings and different things that you basically what's on your presentation board. So it's not an interactive thing at that point. You're submitting it, and then they cull through that to produce the semifinalists, and then I believe there's an interview at that point. I'm not 100% sure. And then the finalists are brought in for the full experience. And I have to say, in terms of mentoring, just wanted to make a note on that. When a student gets judged, I mean, we have a judge orientation program. What we want to see is a working scientist, whether from academia or industry, to basically have a conversation with the student about their topic and about their research. And you asked what makes a winning project. So the mentor is trying to draw out what's on the judge's scoring rubric, which is what was their approach, the quality of their scientific research. Did they follow the science process or the engineering design process? Did they keep an original notebook, the thoroughness, the ingenuity and creativity, and the student's advancement? So a good judge is also a kind of mentor, and that person is asking questions of the students that gets the student to think about the work that they've been doing.
Now, I went to the Falmouth Science Fair a couple of weeks ago and spoke with a few of the high school students there. And one, Oliver Newman, he's been on the winners list both last year and this year, went to the State Science Fair last year, did this incredible project that really I think you could have seen from, a young graduate student at a scientific conference, probably looking at the impacts of ocean acidification on behavior of crabs. And it was really this fabulous project. And he said, I could not have done this project without my mentors and my relationships in the scientific community. He had two different scientist mentors, one who was helping him access background data that helped him just formulate his experimental design, and another one who he was actually working in their lab, and they were helping him set up his equipment. And then he also had a grant from this fabulous local foundation, the Margeau Foundation. Kim, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the Margeau Foundation and what it does.
Sure. It was started by a local scientist who worked at MBL and in honor of her parents. And they provide money and support for a student doing environmental research. So the students have to submit a proposal, and they have to have already made a relationship with someone willing to mentor them. And they receive money for materials. Their mentor receives some money. The school receives materials. And they are expected to produce a high-quality project that will compete in their science fair.
Obviously, Oliver did that. It was a very impressive project. And as I said, on the winners list this year. And then across the aisle from him, I spoke with one of his classmates, Sean Quinn, who it was like two different worlds almost, that Sean was working very independently. He had not had any mentorship from a scientist. All of his equipment, all of his experimental design was something that he said he owned or he had bought with his own money. He set it up in his science classroom at the high school. And he said he'd obviously had some mentorship from his science teacher. Mm-hmm. Also on the winners list, both last year and this year, went to the State Science Fair last year. So doing very well on his own. And I wonder if there's any difference, does the mentorship that they've received from the scientific community at all factor in when judges are looking at that project? No. Cora, do you know at the state level, is that something that the presence of a mentor?
It's a very important question. And students are, at least at the high school level, are, I believe at the middle school as well, are required to have a certain form if they've worked in a research lab or institution. So any student who's not working in their home kitchen or at the school fills out this form, which is prominently displayed on their project. So the judge then understands that they've had the advantage of this mentoring and takes that into consideration when evaluating the project. And I just wanted to go back to the idea of working in a lab versus not. There's no doubt that a student who works directly with a mentor, at least in my mind, there's no doubt that that's a great advantage and it's a win-win. The students have a huge advantage in the building readiness for college and career, and the scientists are usually greatly invigorated by working with the students. But I have to say that I also think that a project from either environment can be a stellar project, and I think back to the state science for the past 8 years has had the benefit of Fish and Richardson, which is a legal firm that does intellectual property law. They bring in a dozen attorneys every year and to the high school fair and go through all the projects and pick out the two most patentable projects, and then they give them all legal expenses paid to patent their projects. And I have to say, for the past 8 years, the success rate has been 100%. These high school kids are patenting their projects. And you may say, well, gosh, that would require incredible depth and content knowledge and or something complex, but it's a wide range of things. And I remember one young woman who figured out that a soap that would change, she created a soap that would change colors when all the bacteria was gone. So just think of, and she got it patented, and just think of the value to that in hospitals where you're scrubbing your hands so you don't infect anyone and things like that. So it can be the most simplest idea, or it can be something as complex that leads to cures for cancer.
I have to say, I was very impressed when I was at the Falmouth Science Fair walking down. It's a small aisle, and Kim, I guess you said this is about average. There's usually only a dozen or two dozen high school projects at the Falmouth Fair, so it was probably about an average year, but incredibly high quality. And really, they were projects that would not have seemed out of place at a real scientific conference. It kind of felt like being at a conference, you know, at a poster session. There was a new hexacopter that had been designed by a student. So it actually, you know, it's like six helicopter rotors and flies up in the air to do aerial survey work. There was Oliver's project looking at ocean acidification. There was Sean's project looking at the impact of acidity or pH on the nitrogen cycle. I mean, these were really some really high quality and very original projects. I was really impressed.
Right. And I think you'll see reflected in the prizes the variety of students and topics and, you know, mentor versus no mentor when you see the prizes awarded at the Falmouth Science Fair.
So let's talk about prizes for a minute, because I know especially at the high school level, winning at least at the state or at the international level can be really quite lucrative. And even at the Falmouth level, there are a number of monetary prizes when you win the science fair. So I mean, how much money are we talking for these students?
Well, I think that in the Falmouth Fair, for example, one of the winners ended up with something like $4,500 in scholarships and prizes. Some of those might have been in the form of a scholarship to do a high school program at Sea Education Association, or an outright monetary award from MBL, for example, or HUI. And those do add up. Also, the local science businesses and technical businesses in town offer prizes, as do some of the local environmental organizations.
All right. Janice is on the line from Falmouth. What's on your mind, Janice?
Well, hi. I just wanted to say that the science fair at Falmouth, the Falmouth Public Schools, both at the junior high and the high school level, were hugely important to my son. And they gave him an outlet for his intellectual creativity and allowed him to show what he could do. And his science fair projects were a major reason he got into the school of his choice. And because he did not have a straight A average in high school, and his projects demonstrated what he could do, and so it was an invaluable experience for him, and probably the most important thing he did in high school were his science fair projects.
Well, Janice, thank you so much for that call and for sharing that experience. I mean, obviously, we're talking about the monetary prizes and the financial boost that students can get, but obviously there's a major intangible impact that these science fairs can have.
Absolutely. And I think just the experience of any age child, when you're at the high school or at the science fair and you see a second grader answering questions from a judge and he or she having to explain their process, is great experience for kids to have to talk to adults and have to kind of own their project. And at the high school level, that's great experience as well.
Cora, I know that the Massachusetts State Fair has actually gone back and done a survey of past participants in terms of where they've ended up academically and career-wise. Is there actual data at this point to give us some idea of the impact that these science fairs have on participants?
Well, we were quite astonished at the results, even though we expected them to be positive, but we found that over 50% of the respondents were in, these are former students in the science fair, in the state science fair, were in sustained, successful STEM careers of 10 years or more. And over three quarters told us that the science fair had a very positive impact on their choice of career and their success in career. So I think what the parent that I'm hearing is saying, I couldn't agree more. And it's a pathway to college for some who wouldn't otherwise have that pathway through the many scholarships. So one of the, I think, the most amazing scholarships that we give out, and thank you very much to UMass Boston, is a four-year full scholarship to UMass Boston. And that has really made a difference in many young people's lives.
I can tell you personally that I don't remember if I won anything in science fairs, but I remember my projects vividly. And I don't know if they really were what put me on the path to a career in science and my love of science, but they absolutely had an impact. Kama Thieler is administrator of Woods Hole Science Technology Education Partnership. Cora Beth Abel is executive director of Massachusetts State Science and Engineering Fair. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab on the Point is produced by Heather Goldstone. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Living Lab on the Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.